War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, Monday, December the 23rd, the year of our Lord, 2019. I'm Raheem Kassam with Jason Miller in the historic Breitbart Embassy on Capitol Hill. Stephen K. Bannon joining us down the line on assignment today, Christmas Eve, here in Washington, D.C. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Radio Network, Newsmax TV, America's Voice.news. You can follow us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and all importantly, iTunes. This is episode 86 of the War Room Impeachment Show. We're very, very, very grateful for everybody out there who's been sharing it, tweeting it, Facebooking it. Every single download and play pushes us up those charts for the podcast, and that means more people are listening. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Raheem. We are here, and the Democrats still have not sent over the articles of impeachment to the U.S. Senate. What is going on?
We should have a little ticker on the wall. Days since Trump impeached, in inverted commas, and articles haven't been sent over.
I think this weekend was a tell.
Oh, we have Steve.
I think here's the serious nature of it. Two things happened. Number one, the FOIA request brought up these emails, and then John Bolton's interview with Jonathan Swan of Axios. I think this is just going to show you that the Democrats don't have a case, and what they're going to try to do is garner up all of this additional information or try to garner up all this information. I think Nancy Pelosi may hold this back until I don't believe she's going to send it over the first week of January. I think they realize they have a very weak case, and they're going to, they're working. We know they're working over the holiday period. They haven't left Washington, the people on the staffs, and they're going to to try to get as much information as possible and add that to the bill of impeachment.
Does the quest for new evidence, will be a permanent quest for new evidence alongside a permanent impeachment, Jason? What Chuck Schumer announced this weekend in a press conference, or the last couple of days at least in the press conference, can't tell at Christmas time what's weekend and what's not, and the FOIA request that revealed an email from OMB. Tell us a little bit about that and this new evidence, in inverted commas.
So over the weekend, we saw Chuck Schumer come out and jump in on new emails from OMB official Mike Duffy some 90 minutes or so after President Trump's July 25th phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky, asking to put a pause on the aid or to further dive into that, which conveniently, and of course this morning all the lemmings in the mainstream media are chasing after it, but the thing that everybody is completely ignoring is the Josh Dossie story from December 12th in the Washington Post, where the White House and OMB laid out all of the efforts that were made to put a pause or to further investigate aid to Ukraine going back to June 19th. A full 5 weeks in advance of this call. But I think, Raheem and Steve, the thing that really stood out to me from the Sunday shows this weekend is the Democrats have no clue how they want to prosecute this going forward. They're a bit of a witch hunt in search of a witch, so to speak. And anyone who went out there and said they had any idea when this was going to get resolved or brought forward was purely guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, let's go back to the Josh Dossie story. I think it shows that how desperate they are when they've blown up these emails like there's some big revelation. When the Josh Dossie story says this was, things like this were being discussed back in early June. But I think it showed the desperation the Democrats are trying to get to bolster the hearsay. Because I think they're afraid that the Democrats are going to get put on trial. If they go forward with the hearsay, that is the bulk of what they've been able to put together, guys. I think they're afraid that they're going to get crushed in the first couple of days of the manager's presentation. But what you're seeing now is just every day trying to come up with additional evidence to bolster this. And I agree with you, Jason. I thought the Sunday shows yesterday were a terrible day for the Democrats. It didn't show any kind of coordination, any real idea. Mitch McConnell, I think, was on Fox and Friends again this morning saying that, hey, he and Schumer had a discussion. He wants the Clinton kind of structure but that nothing's getting rectified over the Christmas holidays, that the Democrats have kind of gone silent. We won't know anything about this until people return in early to mid-January.
Let's just I just want to recap on this for people who haven't seen that, who've been settling in for the Christmas period over the course of this weekend. These emails have been the subject of Freedom of Information inquiry that a judge weighed in on, I think, at the end of November, and said that certain things had to be released, not entirely redacted at the same time. The document in particular that the Center for Public Integrity is pointing out here is the one from White House official Michael Duffy. And Duffy says the following in an email to the Office of Management and Budget. It says, based on guidance I've received and in light of the administration's plans to review assistance to Ukraine, including the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, please hold off on any additional DoD obligations of these funds pending direction from that process. I mean, it's hardly this barnstorming, don't send any money until we get a Biden... Zelensky in a public box type email. This is pretty, as the Josh Dorsey story said earlier on, this is pretty routine stuff.
Well, it is. And the other thing, too, that Crying Chuck was really jumping on this morning was this line in the email from Duffy that requesting to Pentagon officials to keep the information closely held to those who need to know to execute direction. This really, in my opinion, cuts against the entire quid pro quo argument because, as we know, Ukrainians didn't even know that there was a pause that was put on any of the aid until the whole story became public months later. And so they really seem to be arguing against themselves. And I going back to my point here, the Democrats are negotiating against themselves. Mitch McConnell is more than fine to just sit there and say, we don't need to go and bring this forward. And so if the Democrats want to continue to spin around in the circle and have Nancy and Chuck trying to figure out where they want to take this, I don't think the Senate really cares.
Yeah, and it's worth also bearing in mind, Steve, I want to get your input on this. The Center of Public Integrity's... how it's constituted, who's on its board, where it gets its funding from. It's the Omidyar Network, which is, you know, the people guy behind this Bill Kristol New Weekly Standard deal. You've got the Open Society Foundations, of course, as usual, and on the board, Arianna Huffington, Christine Amanpour. You know, this is hardly going to be a neutral outfit which presents these emails in a fair way.
This is the media establishment, right? This is the new media establishment.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the other thing, too, that I think by the media and Crying Chuck jumping all over these Duffy emails, the thing that they're completely ignoring, we're going to be getting a bit more into when we come back here on Friday, they're completely ignoring the fact that the NDAAs, the National Defense Authorization Acts, for years have said that any aid to Ukraine needs to be tied into anti-corruption efforts, that governments ranging all the way back to the beginning, administrations ranging all the way back to the beginning, have hit the pause button on aid is leveraged to push down, whether it be on corruption, or we saw Obama do it with Nigeria. We've seen the U.S. do it going into Lebanon. We're seeing other entities doing it, like the IMF with regard to Ukraine. This is all very pro forma, happens with every single administration. But the overall delay in this, I do think it warrants mentioning, is going to run up to the February 3rd Iowa caucus and even the February 4th State of the Union.
You see, the thing I think is going to get hammered home over the holidays is that, you know, he was supposed to be a clear and present danger. If you look at when she started on September 24th, right, when she bigfooted the president's great speech on nationalism to the underpinnings of nationalism to the UN General Assembly, which had their heads blown up, she tried to bigfoot that by her announcement she was starting the impeachment inquiry. The whole pace of this through the secret auditions with Adam Schiff, then to the public hearings on intelligence, to judiciary, to the rules committee, to the debate and the vote, was he's a clear and present danger. He's a clear and present danger because he's shown that he had Russian help in 2016, and now he's seeking Russian and Ukrainian help, foreign government help in 2020. He's a clear and present danger and has to be stopped. Now we're in a total hang fire, and we realize the hang fire is because they're scrambling to get other evidence. I just think the polling, and I think people, particularly over the holidays, they talk about this. And I think the Milwaukee Sentinel had a front page story today, but people are going to start questioning, what was the rush to judgment? Why was this thing done so quickly? Why did it have to happen so fast? Why did we have to do it 10 times faster than we've done any others to impeach him and yet you don't immediately go to the Senate. Now that, you know, McConnell's saying, hey, nothing's going to be discussed over the Christmas holidays. He essentially said, have a Merry Christmas. We'll revisit this back in January when they get back. And so, and now this whole rush to get, which I really think is marginalia, and they're going to every piece of marginalia they're going to make like it's a huge effort. You saw where they're pushing already Susan Collins with these articles in The Hill and others to make her like the swing vote on allowing additional information.
Steve, we got to take a break here, Steve. We'll continue with that thought here. War Room Impeachment, episode 87, December 23rd, 2019. We'll be right back.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back. War Room Impeachment, episode 86. I said 87 before the break, getting ahead of myself. That's the very special Christmas Eve episode that's coming tomorrow. Make sure you're tuned in here on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Newsmax, Salem, America's Voice, .news, and across all the platforms, all over digital media. And we'll be very grateful to you if you'd give us a follow on Twitter, at WarRoom2020. Okay, guys, Lindsey Graham this weekend says that he is going to call people who signed the Trump campaign Pfizer warrants. The warrants specifically, not just to start the surveillance of, but there were obviously many efforts to renew the surveillance of Trump campaign Carter Page.
This goes to a deeper issue I want your guys' ideas on. This goes to the issue of not a long trial and not witnesses called in, the whistleblower, etc. Do you believe that Lindsey Graham's Judiciary Committee, because I think this is the first, you know, this is the warning shot, that he would be able to handle if he kept a short trial with no witnesses? You just went through the case they have today. When you got the vote, you take the vote, get acquitted, move on. And that Lindsey Graham and Judiciary and other people and maybe the Senate Intel or Senate Oversight have enough grit and determination to really get to the bottom of this.
I think, Steve, we're being led into some kind of false binary choice here, where it's either we go for this, it's one of the two here, and that, hey, let's have this short speed trial and we'll go and get to this, and that's the choice that we're making. I mean, to be clear, what Senator Graham told Fox News is, quote, I'm going to call every person who signed the warrant application. I'm going to find out why Brennan, why he spoke with Harry Reid to talk about the investigation. We're going to look long and hard at FISA abuses. I'm going to look at Christopher Wray. Someone needs to go to jail. I'm looking at John Durham, the U.S. attorney, to hold people criminally accountable. But Steve, I tweeted this out yesterday, and I was shocked how many of our rock solid conservative allies threw the BS flag and said it's never going to happen. The actions speak louder than words, and they'll believe it when these people start getting hauled in. I tell you, the tolerance with our listeners, with our base right now, they don't believe that anything is ever going to get done.
It's zero tolerance. And do you think this is well deserved, Jason? You've been around both the movement and D.C. Do you think people's zero tolerance saying, hey, I hear it, but I've heard this talk before. You know, I heard about the 40 subpoenas that Nunez sent over, but Paul Ryan never backed him up. I've heard all this for years and years and years. I'm tired of it. I want to see action. I want to see action in a trial.
Absolutely. And people are pissed off. This Horowitz investigation took years, and then it comes out, and it's a mixed bag. Obviously, 17 FISA abuses is not a mixed bag, and that is serious, serious stuff. But then it wasn't nearly... It wasn't portrayed nearly as explosive as it should have been. I mean, you have this Kevin Kleinsmith, FBI lawyer, who's going to go to jail. I mean, like I said, his next tailored suit will be in all orange. I mean, these are some serious, serious acts of criminality that are going on here. But people are pissed off. They're like, why doesn't anyone ever get to the bottom of it? We don't want to hear about promises. We will believe it when folks get hauled in with subpoenaed and they're brought in front of these committees, start testifying, and then they go to jail.
Well, I mean, how much does this as well, how much do we have to consider the news that came out 3 days ago? Judge Rosemary Collyer, the head of the FISA courts, who sent that rebuke letter to the FBI, about the FBI and to the FBI last week, now stepping down in the new year, and in her stead comes James Boasberg, who, you know, Collyer was, I think, a Bush appointee, was a little bit more, you could say, of the political right. This guy, Boasberg, Obama appointee, very much not one of us. And this is somebody who we trust to take over a process that has been used, that has been politicized against the right? Steve.
Look, I think it's to Jason's point, Raheem, there's so much there in this whole FISA debacle that really plays into, I think, what Rand Paul and some of our more libertarian colleagues have been saying for years.
Exactly.
About potential abuses of the Patriot Act and abuses of this court, that if you go gangbusters and really go to drill down on this, there's so much there. And I think exculpatory is positive for the president and how the system really was rigged against him. I think what the Twitter feedback on Jason's comments is that people are saying, we've heard all this before. We've heard there's going to be investigations before. We've heard that we're going to hold people accountable before, and it never happens. The only person who's trying to hold accountable is President Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two go hand in hand, Jason. The reason I think there's a big problem with FISA. We lots of people, like Rand Paul, as Steve says, have known that for a very long time. This has started to come out. Collier sends this letter, get your act together. We don't want this happening again. Evidence records, when you come to apply for warrants and things like that, they have to be flawless. They can't be doctored. All of the stuff that we saw happen with Carter Page and the Trump campaign. Couple of days later, there's a replacement appointed. Now, there's two ways of looking at these things. And I want to go back to what you said about the base, right? They don't believe it, and they have cause not to believe this stuff. On the other hand, you could read that and say, well, maybe they're putting this Obama guy in there because they want to throw all those people under the bus. He's the perfect fall guy for it. Wash our hands clean of the whole FISA thing. Make it a real political talking point. Who's against FISA and who's for it anymore?
So, and going back to something we were talking about a moment ago, I think the other thing that many of our conservatives and our Trump supporters are concerned about, number one, that none of this ever comes up in the course of the Senate trial, that we basically prosecute things purely on the Democrats' terms. President Trump gets clear, there's the acquittal, but not the full exoneration. But I think, too, and let's not lose sight of this, what I hear from a lot of people out there is they're concerned that if we say there's going to be this back-end investigation, that we're going to get to the bottom of this after the fact, that once we get through the impeachment trial, that many of our D.C. allies are simply going to say, hey, guys, we just got through this impeachment trial. Let's focus on other issues. Let's go and focus on the economy. Everything's going in President Trump's favor. Let's just leave alone these past investigations, and they will never get to it. That's a real concern after being jerked around for so many years.
And that's the concern. And I think in addition, here on the trial, you're going to have global media focus on the trial of the century. God bless some of these committee meetings and judiciary or House intel or wherever it goes. But that will still be a kind of inside the beltway story. The trial will actually get into the American consciousness. People who normally are lower information voters, just not that tied into the daily give and take of politics, will actually pay attention to it. That's where you've got to expose this. This trial gives you a unique opportunity to do that.
That's true. And speaking of the trial, Jason, at the beginning of the show, Steve buried a little bit of a lead there, and it'll be a shock to a lot of people. The trial, we've got about a minute left, so give 30 seconds. The trial, not due to begin early Jan, is a change, a massive sea change. I know you talked about it this weekend, Steve, with Bill McGinley as well. Just recap on that 20 seconds on why that's been pushed back and when we expect it to really start.
Well, because the speaker she's not even going to deal with pulling this thing together to the first week of January. That means it's probably not even going to get to the Senate until the 15th, and we still haven't negotiated. And it's not going to be easy negotiation on the structure. You could be the mid to late January, third week of January to start. And Jason, as you've got we can talk about this after the break. We had State of the Union coming up, and then you've got the Iowa caucuses.
That's February 3rd. Iowa caucus is February 3rd.
Wow. All right, guys, we've got to jump to another break. War Room Impeachment. It is Monday, December the 23rd, 2019. We are live from the historic Breitbart Embassy on Capitol Hill. Jason Miller, Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon. We'll be back with more War Room Impeachment. Don't go anywhere right after this break.
Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment Monday, December the 23rd, year of our Lord 2019. Raheem Kassam and Jason Miller broadcasting live from Capitol Hill. Episode 86 of War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Newsmax TV, the Salem Broadcasting Network, AmericasVoice.news. Stephen K. Bannon joining us down the line. I want to hand back over to Mr. Bannon and Mr. Miller talking about the president, but not this president, the last president, and what the president has been saying to big donors, big Democrat donors behind closed doors. Jason, why don't you tee us up on this one?
Yeah, so interesting story out in The Hill this morning talking about how President Trump has been talking up Elizabeth Warren behind closed doors with wealthy Wall Street executives saying, hey guys, don't worry, she's not going to completely tank the economy. Now, that's slightly my description, probably not the same words that President Obama used. But I think this is interesting for a number of facts. Number one, what about Joe Biden? Wasn't Joe Biden President Obama's VP? So I think that's interesting. But also, too, look, President Obama, love him or hate him, I think we know where most people listening right now probably weigh in on that. But I think it's a recognition that they think that Senator Warren is the real deal when it comes to this Democratic primary field. And if you saw the debate the other night, you'd probably think the same thing.
Really? Steve?
I think this is a huge development. It's also the placement. It wasn't just a story on the Hill. It was the lead story on the Hill.
Yes.
It even took Niall Stenang's memo and bumped it down. So this was trying to be emphasized. I think this is a huge development. As we've heard, one of the biggest problems she's had is with the hedge fund and other major donors to the Democratic Party, which are obviously very concerned about her entire economic program. Not just, and people should understand this, they're not just concerned about the taxes and the taxes on assets. They're really deep concern among a number of Democrats on Wall Street and industry about her program might actually tank the economy and tank the stock market. And so to have this word, and this clearly comes from, Jason, I would say an Obama leak, that, and I think for Joe Biden, it couldn't come at a worse time. Even though, quote-unquote, he had his best debate performance, I think he's one of the weaker candidates. And I don't think it could. One of the things he's, drafting off of is this implicit support from Obama.
One of the things that sticks in my mind from one of the early Democrat debates, and we can laugh at Eric Swalwell all we want, but that moment, that cringe moment where he says, pass the torch. This last Dem debate, you really did feel that the torch was being passed. You really feel like people were talking past and over Joe Biden and to some extent Bernie Sanders, with Klobuchar and Mayor Pete Buttigieg having their own tete-a-tete, people going at each other. They don't see him as the compelling lead candidate. They still see that everything is to play for there, despite what the media might say about Biden being number one. Remember, they have to plug Biden because they have to say that the president tried to take out the leading and most scary political adversary for the 2020 election campaign. So they continue to pump Biden up. But actually, it looks like from both a Democrat grassroots perspective and from President Obama's perspective, Biden ain't it, Jason.
No, he's not. And I mean, this is the longer this goes, and with President Obama making comments like this behind the scenes, and you see Mayor Bloomberg jumping in, and ultimately, Steve, I think you and I, and I won't speak, Raheem, do you still think Secretary Clinton jumps in?
Oh, I'm a little bit more on the fence than you guys, okay. But I want to believe.
Okay. Look, I mean, this is the reason. It reminds me of that old X-Files poster that was in
Mulder.
Yeah, it was in Mulder's office, the I Want to Believe poster. It's in the background. I need to get one with Crookins.
You and Steve are the Mulder and Scully of Republican politics.
But look, this is a reason. If you're Secretary Clinton and you're looking around right now, think how much money she raised on Wall Street. Remember the leaked speeches, everything that came out. She's got to be looking around saying, wait a minute, Wall Street guys, Elizabeth Warren? No, I'm the real deal. So I think Secretary Clinton's got to be reading this story. She's probably happier than anyone else on the planet about it this morning.
Real quickly before we leave this topic is that I just want to follow up on the timing, because it impacts. I thought the debate the other night, and Raheem, and you, I know you and I disagree, but I think when they're pumping up Klobuchar, how terrific she was, and I thought, good Lord, that was so fleet average. But, you know, thinking of how this trial could actually take those people, even though they're in the witness protection program today, but put them even more so. Jason, how do you think as this trial rolls out, you've got the State of the Union, you've now got, you know, no clear front runner in the field when you look on a state-by-state basis, and it looks like they could, you know, miss all the campaigning, and you know how important retail campaigning is.
Cliffhanger, Steve, we've got to jump to another break. We'll get Jason's response to your question after these short messages. War Room Impeachment, Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, Raheem Kassam, live from the historic Breitbart Embassy. We'll be right back.
Miller, Kassam, War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
And we're back. War Room Impeachment, episode 86, Monday, December the 23rd, 2019. Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, Raheem Kassam. Steve, I hate to have cut you off at the end there, just keeping a tight show clock.
I just want to hear Jason's ideas, because this is all going to hit like a freight train coming when people come back. That's why these shows, we'll talk about our specials.
Yes.
In the last segment, but these shows were 7 days a week, and one of the reasons is to prep people, particularly the grassroots, the people that are the hardcore Trump supporters, to understand what's going to happen in January. January is just going to hit like a flood with so much going on. The House having to actually fulfill the impeachment, the Senate negotiating, the trial starting, the State of the Union, at the entire time that the Democrats should be flooding Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, which are all going to hit in February, bang, bang, bang. I mean, we've never seen in American history a political season like it's about to be upon us.
Right. And their thing, I mean, to your point, Steve, this is going to make it really tough for any of the 2020 Democratic candidates to get their messages out. Everything is going to be consumed by impeachment. And not only that, when you go to the actual physical demands of this, when you're sworn in as a juror in the Senate, you have to be there rear end, sitting in the chair 6 days a week. It'll usually start every day, probably around noon, maybe 12:30, run until 5 or 6 p.m. This will be every day, 6 days a week. There's no time to go to Iowa or to pop up to New mm-hmm. Hampshire. I mean, we're going to start, you know, I can already see the process stories being written of Senator Warren and Senator Sanders and the other three Democrats in the Senate running for president doing their teleconferences and things like that. It's going to make it really tough. But even if you are there, even if you're Sleepy Joe, even if you're Mayor Pete or these others, the media is not going to care about what they're saying to these on the stump. They're going to want to pay attention to what's going on with impeachment.
Also, yeah. Also, no devices. When they're jurors, there's no cell phones, there's no iPhones, there's no iPads, no computers. You got to sit there and listen to this day in and day out, and I think pass questions to the Chief Justice. But you're literally disconnected from the electronic sphere and everything that's going on in your campaign and other places as you sit for here.
It's going to be a lot of bathroom breaks. During that, Steve, we've got a lot of ground to cover as well. I don't know what you pick the topic. We want to go and talk about this National Review situation.
I think we do National Review and the judges. Why don't you and Jason take the lead here?
Yeah, I want to start with the judges to make sure, just in a couple of minutes here, this is a huge, huge one that even the mainstream media is all picking up on. So Washington Post, Colby Ikowitz, has a very good story out right now with the headline of Remaking the Courts. And here's the importance. So last week, talk about some of the successes that President Trump has had here. So last week, the Senate passed confirmed 13 more district court judges, bringing the total up to 187 judges that President Trump has now gotten confirmed to the federal bench. So, and as we take that's obviously the district court and overall number. But when you take a look at the circuit court judges, one out of every four circuit court judges nationally is now a Trump appointee. And this is from Colby's story. This is really good. So for people that might not know this, the 13 circuit courts are the second most powerful in the nation, last stop before going to the Supreme Court. And so far, President Trump has appointed 50 judges to the circuit court benches. And listen to this. His appointments, I didn't realize this until I saw the story. His appointments have now flipped three circuit courts to majority GOP-appointed judges. So think about that. Of those 13, three have now been flipped. And do it by comparison, at this point, President Obama had only confirmed 25. And at the end of 8 years, he'd only had 55. So we're cruising along here. This is so big that President Trump has done this. Oh, and let's not forget, we also have two Supreme Court picks. Pretty big.
Yeah, and listen, if he gets a second term, that's where they need to use the impeachment process to try to stop him, because think about it, these judges are all in their 40s or early 50s. He's remaking the federal bench really for the next 20, 30 years. That's why the progressive left understands he's transformative. It's a transformative presidency, and under no circumstances can they allow a second term.
It's pretty big stuff. I want to pivot to the National Review stuff. You guys were going wild about this weekend while I was enjoying Christmas cookies and receiving nonstop text messages from Steve and Jason over this National Review op-ed, I guess, by Ramesh Panuru. Four tests for impeachment. The National Review, remember the big front page in National Review back ahead of the 2016 election campaign, was the case against Trump. They seem like they're trying to do it again. Jason, you want to walk us through this?
Yeah, so Ramesh Panuru has a story again. The headline
is a senior editor at National
Review. Yeah, this is a senior editor. This is over at National Review. Four tests for impeachment, and walks through and essentially calls for the removal of President Trump, saying that he should be impeached, laying out this. I mean, it's a bazillion words, and you know, you don't need to go to the website and read it, because if you don't think President Trump should be impeached, and there's no reason for you to waste your time this holiday season doing it. But the thing that really struck me. So National Review, which obviously had written all those essays pushing for a candidate not named President Trump back during the primary. But then they seem to have made this, road to Damascus-like conversion. You have Rich Lowry, who runs the website, now out with a book on nationalism. Which I guess, you know, okay.
That's like Madonna writing a book on virtue.
I just like, which I guess, okay, as the summation there.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't understand this. So how do you have the head of the website for National Review out writing a book on nationalism and going on TV and going on Meet the Press and singing the praises of President Trump? In which, by the way, the website's now, I mean, they're basically digital panhandlers. You go there and you start getting all these pop-ups to subscribe and join the nonprofit. But then they flip around, and one of their senior editors is calling for President Trump's impeachment. So I don't know, Raheem, how do you square this?
Well, he's going further than a lot of Democrats are going. And this is the really interesting thing. A lot of those Democrats have been very clear that the evidence record is very thin. Jonathan Turley, the only non-emotional character of the constitutional law experts, saying the evidence record is too thin. Meanwhile, National Review, which, by the way, I don't like that they use the word national. They're not allowed to use the word national. Global Review says that there is not just impetus to impeach the president in the House, but to remove him from office. And by the way, the article by Ramesh is so thin in and of itself. It doesn't see, here's the thing, here's the tell. It doesn't even say at the beginning, you know, abuse of power and blah, blah, blah. It says dereliction of duty, and the dereliction of duty, as Ramesh puts it, is basically anything Ramesh Panuru says the president didn't do that he should have done. Steve,
here's what I think the meta narrative we're going to focus on right after Christmas is that you're seeing a convergence of forces of the reactionary part of the Republican Party that will not allow the Republican Party to be turned into truly a populist party,
right?
Built around the virtues and values of working class and middle class people that are put the country's needs first. And you see the Steve Schmidt group trying to raise the money.
Oh, yeah.
You're seeing now the
Steve, we got another break in here. We'll come back to this and J.K. Rowling after this short break. War Room Impeachment. We'll be right back.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the Frederick's Radio Network.
Welcome back. War Room Impeachment. I want to jump right into this one with Jason Miller and Stephen K. Bannon. Big news. Voldemort is a nationalist and would have supported Brexit, says billionaire Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling. Steve, I know this is one that's very close to your heart.
That in Rich Lowry's book on nationalism is. I don't remember Voldemort being in the index, but I'll let Jason. this is one that everything related to nationalism is evil. And everything related to globalism is is perfect.
This is right. And this comes quickly on the back of J.K. Rowling being on the cusp of being cancelled herself for siding with a woman who lost her job in opposition to the transgender movement and things like that in the United Kingdom. Voldemort, I guess, is the... I don't know Harry Potter very well, Jason. I don't know if you do, but I guess it's the evil one. I know he who shall not be named is the thing that they say. Isn't that what they say about Trump?
I don't know very much all, but I hear he's the only interesting character, so I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, the only thing that I can really contribute to this conversation is that the Harry Potter ride, Universal, it really kicks ass. No, it does. It took the kids there. And
you just cost John Frederick's $250, by the way.
I know, but it's... But it's no, it was. I know nothing about Harry Potter, although I did get shaken down for like some kind of $20 like wizard's wand or something. It's total shakedown racket, which means I'm very jealous about it. But the ride was cool. But J.K. Rowling, what a nutbag.
Steve, why don't you walk us through a little bit about what we can expect from the Christmas Day special of War Room Impeachment?
Yeah, a couple of specials coming on tomorrow on Christmas Eve. We go back to the debate on last Wednesday. We take the most intense moments. Raheem and I will be there to walk through analytics on what was said, how it was said, what symbolism was used. And then on Christmas Day, I do a thing I've done for years with the combat historian Patrick K. O'Donnell. I take America at War and Christmas Day, the great battles of Trenton in the Revolutionary War. We go to Bastogne at Battle of the Bulge, and then we go to Chosin Reservoir, the three great battles fought on Christmas Day or around Christmas Day, where Americans were putting it all on the line for our freedom. And Patrick K. O'Donnell, a brilliant combat historian, will be with me. And then, Raheem, we've got you and Boxing Day on the media.
That's right. I'm joined by Greg Manns from the War Room here and Matthew Palumbo, who's the content manager for the Bongino Report, where we break down on Boxing Day the how the media has reported the impeachment saga so far and what we can expect going forward. It was a great show. And just while we're at it, I mean, I know I've been plugging Bongino Report a lot on this show. I also want to give a shout out, Steve, to some of the other aggregation sites that are out there filling that Matt Drudge void that have been linking back to us and have some great content. CitizenFreePress.com and WhatFinger.com. They're sending us immense amounts of traffic, and we're very grateful for it. We've got about 30 seconds left to go. Gentlemen, anything to do here?
Subscribe to the podcast.
Steve?
And go to warroom.org over the Christmas holiday. You get a little bored with your relatives, as everyone tends to do at some point in time. Go to War Room, check it out.
We'll be keeping the website updated even over the Christmas period, www.warroom.org. And around that Christmas table will be the perfect time to say to each and every one of your family members, Merry Christmas. Whip out your phones, download, subscribe to the War Room podcast. I'm Raheem Kassam. I've had Jason Miller, Stephen K. Bannon on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, America's Voice.news, and everywhere else. We're so grateful. Have a very Merry Christmas.